throb. At its center, the crystal of truth, the source of all life. The Skeksis have corrupted it. And now our world is at risk from the Darkening.
What is the Darkening?
Behold.
I saw something. A vision.
You read too many stories.
No, this was real!
Everything the Skeksis ever told us was a lie.
And now everyone and everything is at risk.
Join me! So we may finally unite as one against our true foe, the Skeksis.
We are eternal!
The Resistance is for me.
Behold the power of the Darkening!
Hope is fragile. Precious. Hope catches the light. Splitting the darkness. Revealing your destiny.
I don't think anything will ever be like it was again.
No. It will be better.
And welcome to the Dead TV Podcast Return for 2026. I am your host, Dr. Chris, and we are going to start a new show, which is going to be two episodes per podcast, culminating in a movie. Now, sometimes we've done the movie first and then the show, because most of the time shows are usually sequels to movies, like we did with War of the Worlds and Blade and several others. Tonight, we are going to be getting Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance. Now, I was supposed to start this show with Mr. Zeneca. It was a big show she was really excited about. She's a huge, huge, huge Jim Benson fan, a big fantasy fan, and she's the one who convinced me to do this show because we hadn't done a fantasy show in quite some time. Done a bunch of horror shows and some sci-fi shows, but not done a real, dedicated, just straight-up fantasy show. And that's what Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance was. And it came out in 2019, just before the pandemic. And unfortunately, it was not killed by the pandemic, but it was killed by the fact that it was just an insanely expensive show to do for Netflix. And but, you know, you have to question, like, why is something so insane to create when they can drop, like, $50 billion and buy Warner Brothers recently? I don't know. Go figure. But this came and went like a gunshot, unfortunately. And we'll be covering another Netflix show coming up soon, one I think does not get enough attention. When this show is over, but that will be announced later on. Joining me for this podcast is a artist and cosplayer, formerly of New England, now of New York City. Introduce yourself.
Hi, everybody. My name is Chandra. Really happy to be here. As he said, I am a artist, and I was a former cosplayer. I haven't really done too much. I've been doing a lot of comic covers, sketch covers, and just drawing my butt off lately. But I'm really excited because this was also one of my favorite movies and shows to watch. So,
how were you introduced to The Dark Crystal, the original, the movie?
My mom. We actually got done watching, like, The Last Unicorn, Willow, and things like that. And she was like, you need to watch this. So we did.
I've only seen the film one time in my entire life when I was a kid. and I've never revisited it, and I figure this is the perfect opportunity to revisit it with watching the TV show prequel. It got one season, unfortunately, and they said it's left unfinished, but enough that, you know, you can just kind of pick it up with the movie. I thought it was a little strange that they went this far back. Why did Netflix decide to do this? You know, it made sense, but it didn't make a lot of sense considering how long ago the show came out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, to me, with starting back so far, I think it's because it's one of my comfort movies, so I have watched it more than once. I personally felt it touched upon some of the small missing gaps in the movie, so I was actually impressed by the prequel. Once you talk about it later, it will make more sense. But I think it filled in a lot of the missing gaps that the movie did not touch upon it at the time.
Yeah, the movie in the beginning has a little bit of an overview of how the planet got to the way it is, and it's like Star Wars. You're kind of picking it up like in the middle of something, and you're like,
what the heck?
Yeah, what is this princess flying? You know, trying to escape from? What is this Death Star plans? You know, things like that. What is the Clone Wars? Things like that. And this show really gives you the entire story of, like, you know, what the fall of the planet really was. And how the Gelflings all got wiped out by the blight. By those vulture creatures, the Skeksis, which are offshoots of another creature on the show. Well, not in the show, but eventually the movie, right? Because they do evolve back into them. When we get into the movie, we'll talk about it. Like, they turn into these beings of light, almost.
There's two species. I'm not sure how far in you got, but they started off as one species, and then they split. You end up with the Skeksis, and I can't remember the other species name. And then you have the dark and the light. They're a balance of each other.
Uh-huh.
They're one being that split.
Gotcha. The cast on this show is pretty incredibly huge. We have a lot of people from both Japanese and America voice acting. Some of the talents that you might know off the top of your head, like Taron Egerton, who had a pretty Oscar-winning performance as Elton John, and Kevin Clash, best known for being the creator of Elmo, as well as Splinter in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle live-action movies. Alice Dinenen, who's been a puppeteer in the industry of Sesame Street and the Muppets. Recently, the Muppet Show came back on ABC for a special. It's on Disney Plus. It was huge ratings, highly well received, with special guest star Sabrina Carpenter. It was definitely, it had its tones of adultness, mature content, but it also was pretty appealing for kids. Absolutely loved it. Anna Taylor-Joy is on this, best known for Fiorisa, as well as many, many, many other things she's done, but that's the most recent thing I can think of. Jason Isaacs, a longtime voice actor.
Love him.
Donna Kimball. And then we have some Japanese voice actors who play Bria and Deet, Shizukio Ito and Neo Toyama, who have 1,001 Japanese voice credits to their name that I can't even get in all of them. Both of them have been on Demon Slayer. That's probably the biggest thing. Rent-A-Girlfriend, I don't know what that is. A Couple of Cuckoos, I don't know what that is. Kirikoro, Bed and Breakfast for Spirits, I don't know what that is. There's so much anime being pumped out from Japan, I cannot keep up with it. It's
some of these I've actually consumed, so I know the characters, I just never knew the voices. It's more or less I fall in love with the character, but yeah, some of these I know.
But a lot of these people did work in the Jim Henson Studio community. Yeah, so they've been used a lot in those. And also for the narrator show, we have Sigourney Weaver.
Love her.
Yeah, Sigourney Weaver is the narrator of this fantastic show. We will get right now into the plot synopsis of the very first episode. I will go over the plot synopsis real quick, and then we'll talk about the events of the first episode and the second episode of Dark Crystal: Age of Resistance. They all dropped on August 30th, 2019 on Netflix. This was at the tail end of a huge summer blockbuster amount of blockbusters, with obviously summer season for 2019 being kicked off with Avengers Endgame. But the first episode is entitled End, Begin, All the Same. And in the land of Thray, a young guard discovers a terrible secret about the Skeksis overlords who control the planet and its powerful crystal of truth. This is a kind of terrifying episode, in my opinion, especially with what happens. And we go through the history of the planet, and you know, its crystal is being white, and you get right away, you get those Skeksis, which always terrified me as a kid.
Really?
I think they were definitely much more gruesomely done in their puppeteering back then in the 80s, whereas here they look pretty cleaned up. But this is also, don't forget, prior to their, like, sickness kind of setting in, because they're not so de-evolved quite yet. Because don't forget, the movie's 100 years later.
Yeah, they're not as gangly and rotten-ridden yet. Yeah, that is true.
Yes, they're definitely not rotten, especially when the Emperor gets all of his clothes ripped off. That is gross.
Oh, yeah, and it's literally looks like you skipped leg day all over your body.
Yeah.
I get it.
We also get, by the way, in this scene, Mark Hamill. He plays the scientist as they are trying to talk about, like, how to, keep their race going.
Yes. That was – it doesn't even sound like him. That man is a very talented voice actor. Chris?
Yep, I'm listening. Go on.
Oh, no, sorry. Like, you just cut off. No, I'm just saying that man is a very talented voice.
Yes, I heard that. You just continue talking.
I was just saying that he's a very talented voice actor. I didn't realize it was him until I pulled up everything. I was like, oh crap. I'm so used to him being Joker at this point that I totally disassociate anything else he has done. And I know that sounds horrible, obviously, besides Star Wars. But I totally disassociate his voice from everything else because his voice is so versatile for a lot of things. But I only hear him as Joker.
So the Skeksis come to the Gelfin village to praise through the streets. I'm gonna pick one of you for a special event. Right from the very beginning, you know this is not gonna be very good.
No, it never is when you have a new species coming in and be like, I am your Lord and Savior, worship me. So that's never a good sign for anything.
Mm-mm.
Especially when you see them in the first episode, what is it, the tithe that they take even from like the poorest, and like and how you seeing them consume everything, just food wise, and how like not necessarily broken down, but how like greedy and just malicious you are, and they're praising these greedy things, and they're just take, it doesn't matter how much you have. So it's definitely a precursor, and it kind of sets the tone for the rest of the show, what is to come from the Skeksis.
Right, absolutely. Go on with your notes.
I don't have any notes. I mean, like I said, they're greedy. And like you had mentioned before, how their body gets decrepit. And I think that has a lot to do with what they, I'm probably jumping ahead a little bit, you know, has just something to do with what they did to the crystal, how they manipulated the crystal, which we also see in episode one, how they steal the essence of a Gelfling because the crystal's not doing what it needs to do. But they also put the Gelflings at a lower rank than them, expecting them to worship them and give them everything for basically nothing. And they're not even doing really anything. It's just they're saying they are because they are that higher being, per se, in the eyes of the Gelflings, because they're so small. But essentially, the Gelflings are doing everything. So it's not a very balanced system of power.
Some of the other Skeksoids in the scene we get are Awkwafina. She's the collector. Benedict Wong is the general, the leader of them. Keegan-Michael Key is the ritual master. Simon Pegg is the chamberlain. And Helena Smee is the collector in the costume. Warwick Brownland Pike is the collector in the costume. But you have some top-notch voice acting for the individual people.
Yeah. The whole cast is loaded. The entire cast is loaded.
One of the things is that one of the Skeevar General doesn't appear in the original Dark Crystal, but the character apparently was in the Tokyo Pop manga, and that was published in 2007 and 2010, and they decided to include that in here as those Tokyo Pop comics are prequels to the movie as well.
Right. You'll also find that they pull not only from the mangas, but there's also a comic, and the original Dark Crystal story is based off that. So they pull a lot of their Dark Crystal lore and references from a multitude of the Dark Crystal verse. And it's really cool, especially if you are a fan and you have delved that deep into the end of the Dark Crystal lore and, you know, just the lore in general. You'll be very excited to see those things reflected in the show as well.
You have the princess of the Gelfins, who is, you know, all headstrong and on her own, and she doesn't follow and comply with the other high royalty Gelfings. She wants to do her own thing and be adventurous. She's hanging out in trees, and she shows up at the ceremony with, like, you know, face paint on and kind of a mess. This is like, you know, you remember Princess Leia in the Obi-Wan Kenobi show, and other princesses who don't want to comply to being a princess. Brave does that as well.
Mm-hmm. It's a very standard princess formula, except this one's covered in ink and wants to consume knowledge, a lot of it, and has so many questions. I actually liked how inquisitive she was, because they didn't really make her, for a princess, as standard things go, princess can tend to be very weak and feeble at times, but she was just like, I need the knowledge, and that's what she was consuming. I found that a very different approach to establishing a base for a princess.
What was the princess's name?
The princess, oh my god. They just called her the princess. They used her real name a few times, and
yes.
I can't remember. It's not Brea. It's not Rain. Oh my god.
Brea.
It is Rhea?
It's Brea. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Brea. Yeah, Brea.
Well, they call her the princess quite a bit, so like her real name just kind of over my head. She was voiced by Anya Taylor, as well as Alice Dineen. Oh god, I messed that one up. She had two voices. Oh no, the puppeteer and the voice. And mm-hmm. then there was a Asian voice too. There's three different voices.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's because of the singing as well that the voice changed so much. Because one was a puppeteer and two with the actual voices.
Gotcha. The Rian, played by Taron Egerton, is the one who follows her into the chambers of the Skezoids, Skexes, and witnesses the entire ordeal of them, you know, acting like this is some kind of, like, you know, great honor and ceremony, when in fact they just destroy her with the Dark Crystal, sucking all the life force out of her and turning it into this vial that they get completely drunk on. This essence. Yeah. This glowing essence, as he watches in horror as this is happening, and then they just start consuming it like a drug.
And she has a brief moment of clarity before being consumed completely, which was kind of heartbreaking as well.
Yeah, they can convey a lot with the puppets.
Yeah.
Then they witness him, they see him, and chase after him, and that's how it immediately cuts.
And they would not have been in that situation if they didn't see, I can't remember the thing's actual name, but like the spider-like thing that went into the tunnels, because they are not allowed in the Skeksis realm. That's kind of like no man's land, like that's where our saviors go, you don't go there. But when they had seen them, once they realized there was another Gelfling in there, they chased them out of the tunnel to, you know, go after them, basically silence them. And then when they couldn't get them, you know, started spreading rumors, and that's another abuse of power on the Skeksis then at that point.
Yeah, that all comes up in the show later on. Our hero ends. Also, one of the other Gelfings ascends upwards.
I love her. The little naive one that has been living in the tunnels. What is her name? She didn't see sunlight until she was lifted up after speaking to the tree. And they gave her, you know, like this vision or prophecy kind of thing to tell her to leave her little hidey hole. What is her name?
Deet.
I like her.
That's all the notes I have for this episode. By the way, the princess name, the princess who gets killed is not Brea. That's a different character. Mira.
Mira, yeah.
Mira, sorry. Yeah, it's Mira. Mira. Brea. Brea. They wouldn't give Anna Taylor-Joy one episode to do a voice or whatever. She's on 10 episodes of the show. So it's Mira is the rambunctious little princess that gets
and Freya was the princess Gelfling.
Yes. Okay. Mira is the one that is selected to go off with the Skexes, and then gets her life force taken away from her and literally killed.
I'm not sure if you noticed this. I was giggling when I was watching Dark Crystal, but Bria's mother, the queen of the Gelflings, right, who works very close with the Skeksis, if you look at her outfit that she is wearing, you know, the very regal, very elven ethereal kind of look, for whatever reason, it reminds me of I believe it's the evil witch on Willow, the one that turns people into pigs.
Yes.
They have a very similar look, and I was like, okay, I had to look it up. I was like, I know the two movies have no correlation. They're the same people didn't work on it, but it heavily resembles that evil queen on Willow.
Well, moving on to the second episode, which is Nothing Is Simple Anymore. As the Deets set out on her quest, Agra, the old woman, awakens from a long journey. Rian flees the castle, and Bree searches for the meaning of the mysterious symbol. This episode, by the way, is directed by Louis Lantier. Do you know who that is?
No, I actually do not.
The director of Unleashed, the Transporter movies, Fast X, The Incredible Hulk with Edward Norton, so the one that's in the MCU.
Mm-hmm.
And he directed, he has been a prolific director in sci-fi, fantasy stuff, superhero-related things for an incredibly long time. The Brothers Grimbley, Clash of the Titans. He's got a new movie that came out like a year ago called Tycoon. I don't know much about it, but he's going to be the director of Fast Forever coming up, which is the last Fast and the Furious movie.
Oh, wow. Mm. Yeah, so it makes a lot of sense as to why they pulled him in on this project.
Yes. But I didn't realize that he was the director of all of these episodes.
Neither did I.
Hmm. So in the next episode of the show, we have this guy, with this like pug nose face or whatever, just looks ridiculous and funny. But the old woman witch that we know from the movie finally makes her appearance after only kind of being a slight cameo in the previous one. The dog-like creature that Bree tries to communicate with is adorable, and I've seen that as multiple memes before.
I want one. It is fluffy. I want one. Even though it just growls at her at first, I need one.
Also, what do you think of Gelfling's puppets kissing?
I mean, it's definitely puppets kissing. Yeah, it was awkward. But like I said, it's definitely, I like that they stuck to, they didn't use, you know, CGI or anything else, that it was the classic puppeteering that I loved so much in a lot of my childhood movies and TV shows. But it was a vibe for sure.
There's also the scene where Rian and his buddy go walking into the Dark Crystal Chamber, the Crystal of Truth Chamber, and you can clearly tell those are not puppets walking into that.
I actually didn't notice that. So when I'm watching it, I'm so enthralled with the minute details in the clothing and the sets and just watching the puppets move the way they do,
mm-hmm.
that I'm missing anything like that because I'm just so involved in what's going on.
Our two Gelflings get captured by the Skexes. We say goodbye to Mark Hamill in this episode as they implement like torture to him by putting what looks to be some kind of like scorpion style bug into his eye, and it crawls into his eye socket.
Yeah, that wasn't very pleasant. It was what the purpose of killing the scientist, because scientist was not fixing the machine as fast as he humanly could, correct? If
yes.
I remember correctly. Yeah. That's still a very horrible way to go out, but as I stated before, the Skeksis are very self-serving and greedy, so it makes a lot of sense as to why they killed him, but I think they probably would have reached better potential if they did not kill him.
Mm.
I'm just saying.
There's a spin-off graphic novel that gives you Hupp's backstory. He was a cook who stood up to the Skeksis.
And then became a mad scientist?
The cook who stands up to the Skeksis? Sure. No, it says the Hup is one of the Gelfing.
Oh, I was like, wait, we just talked about the mad science. So my brain went elsewhere.
No.
Don't even worry about it.
Yeah, a spinoff graphic novel details Hup's backstory. He was a cook who stood up to the Skeksis, the treasure, and was banished as a result and tagged along for a while with the Vapra. The Gelfing named Barfonius was once a paladin but became a bard. This is all depicted in that graphic novel.
I've never really delved too far into the graphic novels, and like I said, there's comics as well. I know about... Oh, that's another good voice actor.
Mm-hmm. Actor in general who's been in, like, multiple things. He was in... He's Artem Zola in the first two Captain America movies. He's in the Hunger Games. He's in Hijack, which is a TV series on Apple TV right now, starring Idris Elba.
He does a lot of sci-fi, yes.
Yeah, multiple parts in multiple various things.
Like I said, he always plays like a villain type person, and
yeah,
it's always
or an
something
underling.
Fantasy.
Yeah, or
yeah, it's something fantasy that I'm watching. So,
the lock snake is the thing they put on the door to stop people from stealing the essence.
It reminds me of the thing in Neverending Story, on the book. The lock on the book, the lock with the snake.
Oh, the symbol of the Neverending Story.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes. That's pretty much the only thing I took from that. Like I said, I've been really enthralled with how close. In detail for modern puppetry, how they got it to the movie. And yes, I know we're not talking about the movie right now. I'm just comparing like the sets and modern puppetry to the beginning of the puppetry. And the fact that I've seen one of the Skeksis and the actual Skeksis that were on the original set in person. So I'm looking more at the environment right now, watching it. This is my, I think, second or third run through
mm-hmm.
on the show. But it's just always fascinating. It's always fascinating, especially as an artist. Sometimes you can pick up subtle undertones by the sets or the color changes or the small cinematic changes, as you know from watching movies. So that's what I've kind of been focusing on while watching this.
The thing that crawls into the science.